Thank you.
I can. Thank you, sir.
Pins like that. You know, we have our little seal, which I don't know, it's awful to start with, but we don't have our little emails.
You know, they're useful.
They are. I have one board somewhat. Right. I have one board somewhat.
Yeah.
And if you see someone looking to figure out who you are, it's someone you want to talk to because.
Exactly.
You know, they don't know you, they're not going to need
it. It's not a major expenditure.
No, it's not. I think we can afford it.
Can afford five name tags.
It's a good idea.
I hope so.
Is that up on the...
It's really helpful with, like, boards.
No,
you know, when...
You want your boards with these lunches.
Right, no, it's great. Exactly. Yeah. People have questions, they know. They think it's... They know you, but they're not sure. They're looking at you, like we do with them often.
My wife is always reading. It scares me.
That's the awkward thing.
Yeah, it's...
I forgot my iPad, but I can read one. Is that next? Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right, but I did.
How are you?
I went through everything this morning.
Yeah.
It's good.
Comprehensive as usual. Katie, is that like the Barrow's Clan? I keep reading. Is it family business?
Was
it your son? Somebody from the county or something?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was Barrow's, but.
My husband works for UC Riverside, and is and he gets quoted in the papers reasonably often.
Yeah.
And I think most recently it was Wildflowers. Yes, Eric is his.
Oh, you know what? Maybe that was the article.
Yeah.
I noticed it wasn't your son.
Last,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My husband. Okay. Okay.
He's an agent.
Yeah. That's my husband.
I'd probably just stay anyway because Mayor Carnival has the executive committee.
Is it 2:30?
Yeah, I think it is.
I don't get a gavel.
You can.
What do you have
with this position?
Nothing. What else is new? All right. Well, hello everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order because Tom said to. Can we get the roll call, please?
Cathedral City.
Present.
Hi, Abby. How are you doing?
Palm Desert.
Here.
And Palm Springs.
Here.
That sounds like everybody. Okay. I do have a card for public comment, at least two of them. And this is the opportunity. One of them is for an agenda item, and so is the second one. So, let me ask if there's anyone else that has comments about non-agenda items. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to... Is there one? No? Do you have something to say, Katie? It's like an auction. You don't want to raise your hand.
You're going to too many events lately.
Yeah. These live auctions coming up. Yeah.
$1,400 for a spa day.
Yeah. Hi, Katie. What? Any board member, director comments? Okay. Seeing none, then we do have public comment for item 5A, and that would be Rosario Avila. Ms. Avila, welcome.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
So I was going over the agenda packet regarding the consult calendar, and it was the topic regarding the survey results. And I reviewed the audio today, this morning, and I was just a little upset with how... what the minutes say regarding my public comment. So I was wondering if you could change the minutes so that they reflect that I'm specifically talking about the Brown Act, because I even used an example of something Mr. Jonathan said in the November meeting regarding the Brown Act. So I wasn't at the November meeting, so when I showed up to the very next meeting, I had concerns regarding the process of hiring the consultant and the RFP process. So I would just like the minutes to reflect that I am specifically talking about the grant.
Okay.
And that would be it.
So, Ms. Avila, let me just ask you, are you referring to in the minutes under item 3, public comments?
No, it was the survey results. I want to say my item 5.
Thank you. So on page 5, I see. Address the board with concerns regarding the survey consultant procurement issues. No, right. Should we just add, as well as the concerns about the Brown Act?
Yeah, I mean, I would specifically like the Brown Act stated because I even referenced something you had mentioned in the November meeting regarding the Brown Act.
I recall that.
And that would be it.
Okay. Thank you. So perhaps we can entertain a motion to accept the consent calendar with the minutes revised on item 6B to indicate perhaps after the paragraph that starts Rosario Avila to say comma, as well as concerns regarding the Brown Act.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. If there's no discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None. So that is passed. Thank you. And that brings us up to what we're primarily here for, which is item under discussion and action, item 6A. I do have a comment card. If it's okay, we'll get the staff report. Then we'll entertain public comments. And Mr. Floyd, hopefully I won't forget to do that this time. Then we'll have discussion and questions of staff. Staff report, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and board member.
We're honored to have you here in person. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great day. Thanks for the weather.
Yeah.
It's like this every day.
Wait.
In August.
We're going to review similar material that we did last time and try to converge on sufficient information that will allow the board to make a decision about a possible launch next year. Recall that the original launch date was August 1st last year, and we had a board session in the middle of July based on changing power and expected cost circumstances, and the board decided to suspend launch basically until further notice, based on the expectation that a 3% cost savings versus Southern California Edison would be difficult, if not unlikely. And although the board had multiple objectives, it was targeting and setting up a Desert Community Energy Community Choice Aggregation Program of primary importance at that time was demonstrable savings versus the incumbent utility, Southern California Edison. So staff and your consultants put that meeting together to inform you that primary goal was being called in question. And the board took the action to suspend that launch. Subsequent to that, the DCE undertook a survey, and we've been watching the PCIA and other conditions. The survey suggests that the communities involved in Desert Community Energy have other interests than just cost savings, and that certainly, again, wasn't the only approach of the DCE program. And the survey suggested that clean, green, environmentally responsible power was also of concern, as well as local control. And I'm going to paraphrase the results a little bit. Approximately 80% of the respondents suggested that they supported a locally controlled energy entity, and approximately 60% of respondents said that they might be willing to pay as much as 5% more for a environmentally green power supply. The survey covered a lot of other areas, but those are two pieces of information which may assist the board as it wrestles with the decision to, gee, do we start or not start a community choice aggregation program? And if we do, what will be our base product that we put out for the members of participating communities to use to power their homes and their lights and the like? So what are the really three options that exist? One is to go back to the same product that we were considering last year for an August 1 launch. The base product would be the least green product, about 35 or 36% renewable. It's actually matching what Southern California Edison is required by statute to offer. And rates, we might be able to squeeze a little bit of savings out there, but for decision purposes, it would be about at parity based on current market and current power charge and different difference charge adjustment conditions. So for again, for decision purposes, should we establish a program that basically has essentially the same power component and a very similar cost structure to Southern California Edison? Option two would be, at least with some influence on the survey, would be start a program with 100% green product, 100% greenhouse gas-free product. It wouldn't necessarily be 100% renewable. I think the evaluation that Jeff is going to go through in a bit kind of has that 100% greenhouse gas-free comprised of 50% meeting the definitional renewable product and 50% being greenhouse gas-free. An example of a non-renewable greenhouse gas-free product would be a large hydro product, a large hydro product project, or a nuclear project. With that 100% greenhouse gas-free product, if you were to choose to go that route, all your constituents would have the option to either opt down to a lesser green product and a lower cost product, or to remain with Southern California Edison. They could opt out of your program altogether. Those same choices were there last year as well, and they would be there in any case this year. What you would see with that 100% carbon-free product is the rates would be about 7 to 9% above Southern California rates. That's on the generation side component. So they would be higher than Southern California Edison's rates. But that same product would be less than Southern California Edison's rates for its 100% green product.
And that's an option with Edison?
That is an option with Edison. The IOUs, all of the investor-owned utilities, San Diego, Edison, and Pacific Gas and Electric, do allow customers to opt up to 100% green product. And many of the municipals in California allow that same product as well. The third alternative is, we don't feel comfortable making a decision. We don't feel we have enough information. Let's wait and see. Take another 12 months and see what the market conditions and the power conditions and the cost conditions look like. We could study using the funds that we have on hand to redirect DCE, Desert Community Energy, to do some good and valuable efforts, for presumably related to power for the local community. Or you could, at some point, you could simply dissolve DCE and say, you know, we made a valiant effort, but we don't think we can provide sufficient value for our community to go. And in considering whether to go to a 35 or 36% default green product or 100% green default product, some interesting recent statistics came from the Clean Power Alliance. That's formerly the LA Los Angeles County Community Aggregation Program. They've got about 35 or 40 members, and in their February board package, they put out a full detail. This is just a summary of it. But you'll see that for those accounts, there's about 8 or 9 of their communities, including the community that I'm from, the city of Ventura, opted to provide 100% green power product to their residents. The total of those is 275,000 accounts, so it's a fairly large number of customers. only 3.39% opted out so far to remain with Edison. So in our assumptions that Jeff will be going through, we conservatively assume about a 10% opt-out rate. That's typically what most CCAs assume when they're doing their initial analysis. But the actual data supports something substantially less than that. And only a 1.3% opted down to a lower midline product. That was the 50-50. California Power Alliance has, Clean Power Alliance has three products, not two products. They have a 50 green, 50 conventional, and then they have the 35 green, 70, 65 conventional, and then the 100%. If you look at the lean power, that's the one that would be the same comparative product that you were considering implementing last August. That had a 2.37% opt-out rate. So folks, a little less than 2.5% chose to remain with Edison. So about a 1% difference in the opt-out rate between a 100% green product and the least green product. Just for a little more parsing of this, the more colorful table down below looks at just the 100% green folks only. And the simple average of all the entities is a little over 33,000 accounts. Okay, there's 275,000 total, but there's 33,000 on average. But more interestingly, the maximum opt-out rate was the city of Thousand Oaks. It had just under 9% opted out to stay with Edison, 8.9%. And the least one, I forget the name. It was a smaller entity, but it only had a quarter of 1% opt-out rate. So almost everybody stayed completely within the program. And what
before you leave that last slide, I just want to make sure I understand. What does it mean by, like, in the blue table, opt up, opt mid, opt down? I mean,
well, you have if you start with 100% green product, that's your default product. Okay. So
that's the default, in the blue. Okay.
And then the opt out says I'm going to stay with Edison.
Yeah.
The opt to the mid says I will take. It's a little greener than Edison's default 50-50. Product, but I'm going to opt down to the 50-50 product. And then the full opt-down is the one where I take the least green product. So the total opt-downs of the simple average is 0.3% plus 1.16%. It's about 1.5% move away from the 100% green product.
And just to relate the two tables, in the first row of the blue table, blue and white, is detailed out in the more colorful table. So that 100%.
Got it. Thank you.
So from staff's perspective, our suggested approach would be consider the 100% green default product. You do apparently get a slightly larger average opt-out rate, at least based on the data that's out there, but the overwhelming majority of your community will indeed stay with DCE and buy the 100% product. There are demonstrable savings versus Edison's 100% green product. So unlike offering the least green product, you could say we are offering savings against Southern California Edison and not simply a parity product. We're not just simply reinventing the wheel and basically doing what Edison is doing, albeit with a little more insight and focus on what we think our local community needs, but at least from a cost and a green environmental perspective, you're offering essentially the same product. You'd also meet California's 100% carbon-free standard 25 years early. Now, based on an earlier discussion, to clarify, in 2045, that 100% carbon-free is not all renewable. It's 60% renewable with up to 40%, as it's currently configured, being from large hydro or other greenhouse gas free services, resources. And just as a sidebar definition, if you're concerned about greenhouse gases, whether a resource is defined as renewable or not, the most important characteristic is that it's greenhouse gas free. Again, you can define a resource any way you want, but it's the emissions that you and I are concerned about from a global warming perspective. The low income and other special rate classes get protected, so they maintain the advantages that they have now without any action on their part. And as we said earlier, customers can opt down or opt out. So really what you're giving them is one additional choice that they do not now have, desert community energy as opposed to those variety of options that they have only with Southern California Edison. And again, that data says opt-out rates are going to be relatively low. And at least part of that recommendation from staff's level, which Jeff will go into in more detail, is the offering of 100% 100% green default product does improve the business economics associated with desert community as well. It gives you, because the cost is a little bit higher and the revenues are a little bit higher, it gives you a little bit better revenue stream. And there's a little bit more of a margin involved, which sets your organization more quickly on very stable and durable financial footing. So if you were to, and regardless of what you choose, what are the really next steps that need to happen? DCE member councils need to consider and review and contemplate whether to start and whether to offer 100% green default product or a 35 or 36% default product. We are looking at targeting a DCE board decision by March 18th on whether to go forward next year or not. You don't necessarily have to decide the 100% default product at that same meeting, but it's a case where sooner is better because you end up buying bundles of energies to meet your future needs, and depending upon what your default product is, that'll affect the basket of products that you end up putting in your portfolio. Then subsequent to that, we think it'd be beneficial to establish a community energy advisory committee to have another link with the members in your communities and one more vehicle at the board's disposal to provide input and advice about decisions that you will be making if you decide to reestablish your CCA program. Confirm those product offerings again. You don't have to do it immediately, but probably no later than June. You'd want to know what the composition of your default products were and if one or other of the participating communities opted to choose a different default product. There's no requirement necessarily to act in concert here. Each community could decide a separate default product, and that could be administratively implemented. And then we'd start hedging. Jeff and the TEA group would start hedging probably sometime in the second quarter of this year. We do our outreach as was being done last year with the two opt-out notices before start, two opt-out notices post-start, and we revise and dust off the formal practices and procedures that we were working on last year, risk management programs and the like. And then we would suggest a target launch date of April 1st of 2020. And there's a general tendency, as Jeff will further explain, for the program economics to improve just a little bit, especially in the first year, with a little earlier in the year start as opposed to moving it out a little later in the year. So our summary, that was our summary. We suggest 100% green product. Any input from you, Tom, or Katie?
We're just here for board direction. And again, you don't have to make clear decisions, but are we moving in the right direction? And if so, we'll have some actions for your March agenda. And each individual city council, of course, we're doing briefings. And each of those city council meetings, they don't have to make specific decisions about the product offering, but you can. But we'd like to see that all wrapped up, as Don pointed out, by June.
So let me, if it's okay, maybe get the public input, sure. And then we can open to questions and discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Floyd,
yes,
welcome again.
My name is Kim Floyd. I live in Palm Desert, and I speak locally here for the Sierra Club. We have about 1,500 members in the Coachella Valley. The Sierra Club is a strong supporter of community choice aggregation, community choice energy, and has been for the last 3 years, encouraging local communities to take local control of their energy consumption for their communities, and how whatever funding is available that Edison uses for its investors becomes funding available to our local communities. So we're here to encourage the board to proceed with the CCA operations and to do 100% green default position, and also to encourage you all to proceed with accessing the community fundings that are available already, so that we can bring those funds to not just to the local community, but under the decision-making power of our local group here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Floyd. Good to see you again. Is there anyone else present who wishes to address this board regarding this item? Okay.
Savvy.
Yes. Mr. Kaplan, always a pleasure.
Thank you. I would also like to support moving to the 100% green alternative. I think we've heard a number of things just in the past few months in terms of discussions about the impact of climate change, how fast it seems to be moving. I was just reading an article this morning about one of the major glaciers in Antarctica, which seems to be two-thirds gone at this point, and has the potential for raising the ocean levels by a minimum of 2 feet. And so the more that we can become green and the more that we have the opportunity to have local control and the opportunity to provide support for programs that encourage people to go with solar, that encourage people to go with other green, we're going to have more and more electric cars on the road, encouraging people to go that direction as well. So I would certainly support moving in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to comment? Yes.
Rosario Abdulmik, Kansas City. I guess my only comment is if the first program launch didn't happen the first time, what I noticed is you were going to enroll everybody in the lower green option. And so I feel like it was almost kind of an experiment, and we saw it didn't launch. So we saw that it's just a fact, and I'm coming from a perspective of I grew up in the Valley, and the working class is sometimes doesn't pay attention to the mailers. So 2 mailers ahead of time to opt out, give people the chance to opt out, I don't think is sufficient. And so keeping that in mind, I personally think that if we're going to attempt program launch, we should attempt to do it like the first time, which is in the lower green option. And you need to communicate with people that going to the greener 100% option costs more. And so people need to start realizing and seeing if we're going to go green, it's going to cost more than, you know, the lower fossil fuel, cheaper option. So people can start realizing what's really going on. And basically, I'm, again, from the perspective of looking out in the fiduciary interests of working class people, I would rather them opt up than have this program kind of take them by surprise and them notice their bill go up and then realize, oh, we were switched automatically into the 100% greener option. And again, the first time we attempted this program, we were in the lower green option. So I would like to see us attempt that option over the greener option. And if you really want to encourage people to do that, it's just public messaging. and I would like to see us do it that way instead of automatically taking it upon ourselves in here in these offices to kind of switch everyone to the higher, more expensive rate.
Thank you, Ms. Avila. Appreciate it. I think we're almost out of people, but are there any other public comments regarding this agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we'll turn it over to the board members for questions of staff and or comments.
Sure. Yeah. So one thing just in the report, ultimately the sort of the 7 to 9%, you know, above the SCE base product is probably 3.5-4%, it's about half, right, is actually the increase in the bill.
Yes.
So just in reading this, I think council members and the public, it may not be as clear. I would focus more on actually what is your bill going to change? And you almost could footnote, no customer cares about the generation of power costs. They want to know what they're paying. So I would flip the focus on what's the difference. Because it does make it seem like it's double as expensive as it really is.
Understood.
Yeah, so I think that would be helpful just in the presentation. I didn't have a lot of questions because we talked about this at the last meeting, and obviously it'll be up to council sort of what we want to do. But I, for me personally, what I'm going to recommend to them is the 100% carbon free. I think it sort of fits with what the city decided to do for city generation and our sustainability plan and all those other pieces. But ultimately that will decide. And if everything's in time, we'll have it on the next agenda on March 6th is the plan. So that's when I asked for it to come on at council.
So I was at the last meeting here sitting in the audience, and I heard the discussion. I'm new to the city government, but have, of course, been following this like most other people through the media. I know I was pleased with the initial goal, which was to bring some cost savings for our residents and businesses here in the valley, and also offer some options for green energy. So when this, I think that this group, when that ended up last fall, not looking like it was going to be a reality under the way it was going, to take a pause was very wise. And I think that it's right that we look at, you know, where we are. I was surprised, though, at the last meeting that the impetus of what this originally was started for flipped, and now we're looking at a 100% green option as the base option, and we're not looking at really at the cost savings or worrying necessarily for the cost. And I know that there was a survey. I did meet with Katie Barrows, with John Aguilar. We asked for some more information on the survey, which we weren't able to get, because it doesn't seem intuitively to necessarily follow what I would think that it would be. We also raised that we were a little suspicious because it appears that out of this small group of a large population, that there were people in this room and their households and others that received the survey, which seemed remarkable to me. I think you remarked last meeting that your household received the survey, and yours did.
We did.
Charlie tells me his did. You said somebody, another CBAG members did. Lori. Whether they participated in it or not,
yeah.
It seems kind of odd. So I don't really want to go there, but I'm not going to personally place a lot of confidence in the survey. And I know some, as all of you who've been involved in government for a long time know, a lot of it depends on how you ask the questions, too. And I thought the questions were fairly presented, but some of them were things like, well, even to the groups that didn't want to pay more, it's like, but if we did go that way and it was local control, are you in favor of local control? And the people said, well, yes, I'm in favor of local control. So it's all the people want local control. Yeah, but they were starting off by saying they really didn't want to pay more money. So I think you have to make sure you really do look at the surveys also. So I think that with the adoption of the green energy. I did look at the SCE site. I do see that you can buy 100% green energy now. It's very convoluted on there. They add 3.5% per kilowatt hour, so that it's really hard to figure out what percentage-wise. I do like how it's broken down here better. I think it's great that there is a savings at that 100% green option. So I do think that we should proceed, but I really think that the base option ought to be what's offered, and then people can be educated and can opt up from that. So that would be my recommendation. That's what I'll be recommending to my city council.
All good points. So in my mind, there's two questions that were being asked by staff. One is whether we want to proceed. You know, that's kind of the baseline question. And I continue to be a fan and an advocate for DCE, primarily because it's a model that doesn't have government making people's choices. You know, we're not saying this is what you must do because we in this room feel that you know, we're concerned about climate change and we feel that green energy is a good thing. We're not dictating that decision. In fact, the complete opposite. For the first time, we're giving consumers choice, right, which they don't have right now. Edison, it's not like you can change to San Diego Gas and Electric because you don't like Southern California Edison. So for the first time, we'd be giving our residents choice. So just based on that model where government is providing our residents with choice, I do favor moving forward. In terms of which way to go, what I heard staff say is that, we don't need to decide that now, but B, that every city can decide for itself which is the default option. I think that might be a little confusing, you know, because, you know, people talk to each other. They don't necessarily identify by border. So one Edison customer will say, yeah, you know, the 100% is my default option. The other says, no, you're wrong. Mine is this way. So I see a certain advantage if we all move forward kind of lockstep on that. The concerns about particularly the lower income ratepayers who may not completely understand that their rates will go up, that is concerning to me. But my concerns are, I think, assuaged in the sense that if we do proper education, hopefully that we'll mitigate that potential situation. But also that once a ratepayer finds out that their rate did go up 3-4%, if they are concerned about that, they can opt down to the lesser range. I really love that we as ratepayers will have an opportunity to get ahead of the goal by 25 years. And that we do so at a cost that is lower than it would otherwise cost if we wanted to take that action through Edison. So I see a lot of positives. Concerns that have been expressed, I think, are quite valid. But I'm coming down on the side of A, to proceed with this, and B, hopefully if we can come to a consensus to move forward with 100% option being the default, that would be better. If not, then I certainly always respect and advocate for each city making the decision that's right for them.
Some thoughts, and we'll, this will be a good segue into the pro forma that Jeff will lead us on. There's no doubt, in fact, we've talked about it before this meeting, each of the cities could have its own default product. There are some implications, and me and my neighbor having a different provider may not be the biggest one, but certainly a consideration, and we are one region here in many ways. We already have IID, and folks in Rancho Mirage have their own provider, and Edison, et cetera. Another will be a financial one. And what I ask you to do is when Jeff goes through the pro forma, you'll see, and Don alluded to this, the 100% green product has margin. What does that mean? That means that there's money in the bank. The previous default product, if we eke by a 1% rate savings with Edison, there isn't money being generated. And so one of the implications is if, for example, Palm Springs were to go 100% and is providing funding into DCE, that, by the way, one of the twists to this, as a new member, you may not be as painfully well aware as we've been, one of the twists to this is we do better as time goes on because the cost of money goes down. And we are, while we do have a little bit of money in the bank, we need more in order to boost our credit rating. I'm just teasing this out. If Palm Springs is providing the money in the bank that reduces the credit rating, is it Palm Springs that gets the $1 million per year benefit to its customers because of those margins? Or if Palm Springs is generating $2 or $3 million of benefit to our reserves, and when we get past that credit and we're starting to offer energy efficiency programs, do those energy efficiency programs or low-income programs go back to the cities that are generating some margins? So there are a number of implications, and one, just to throw that out there, and no decision, again, has to be made today, nor, I think, in some cases, should be made right away, because I think understanding all those implications, and this board hasn't made any policy determination on it, but it's something for you to think about in the context of the pro forma.
Yeah. Just a couple other comments, just so I understand it. The 35% green default product, which we're talking about, if that was the default or the opt-down, whichever, is not quite the same as what the default was before. The default project before was a little less expensive and greener than what Edison offers as their default.
It's virtually the same.
Yeah.
Didn't we have like 10% more carbon-free and 30% more?
Sure.
Yeah, I think it was 35% renewable and 50%.
Okay, carbon. I just want to add, because when we discuss this, I just want to... I don't think the power savings was the primary goal here. I don't think if there wasn't going to be greener, I don't know this would have even conversation would have ever started. So I just want to. I think that the green was a big part of why we were doing this. It wasn't just savings. Saving a couple percent was a plus for people having an option, but that's probably going to go away now, right? So to do it, and this would be a conversation of council to just have. The same thing at the same cost is a harder argument to put in the time and resources into making this happen. And I think your other point is when we really, so it was, and I can say for Palm Springs, the green piece was probably the predominant part. But the rate savings was a plus. And so I think we need, whichever we go with, we need to make sure the education is as good as we can make it, as we know from other things we've all undertaken. You can do everything possible to educate the public. It doesn't mean most people are going to pay attention until after the fact, but making it clear they can change their mind later. They don't have to stick with whatever, they start with. And the other thing is, I think your other point, which is how do we deal with that? So if cities do different things, we need to really balance out how the revenue is. So, and I don't know if that means that the one similar Edison is actually going to be the same rates, because we're going to have to balance that out. I can imagine the council saying, we have to balance that among the three cities if we're all doing different things. We can't say one city gets all the benefit of that.
There are some policy implications, yes. Certainly. Is this a good time to go into the performance?
Let me comment. Okay, so I agree with you that I think that the green component is very important. If the green component wasn't important, then I would say, well, then let's not proceed. Let's take one of those other options and wait and see, or find something else to do with the revenue that's been generated, because there's just no reason to do it. So I do think that the green component is important. I agree with you. There again, I just don't think that that should be the base product. That's not the way that this was originally put out. It was originally put out as a cost savings to residents and businesses, and also an ability to have the green component. So the green component is still there. That's why I do think it's correct to proceed. And I think I look at it like this. So everybody knows that. Especially certain foods, buying and eating organic food is much more healthful for you. But we don't make a decision to only offer organic foods out at the grocery stores, but we do have a back room that you can get the regular foods. What we do is we try to educate people as to the health benefits for that extra cost for getting organic foods, and we try to get to move people over there. And I think that by proceeding with this, that gives a good option that still is a cost savings to Edison and for that component, and also has the other local control and all those other attributes to it. So I'm not saying that the green component is not important. I just don't think that that's is something that we should automatically sign people up for. I think it's something that we should have people opt up to if that's what they want to do. And as far as the other components about that, wow, because if you were, it almost sounds like, oh, well, this is going to be a problem because, you know, there were some little cherries on this, you know, some nice parts that we were going to be able to offer, but if you're not going to be necessarily paying as much as the others, then we're going to have to look at maybe you don't get the same as the others. Were we going to look at that if certain communities, more people opted to a different product, were we then going to reduce what was available to that community? So, the finances can probably be done in a whole lot of different ways. I mean, if there's a 0.5% cost savings and you end up with just parity, but you're using that to go into the programs, you know, so be it. Or if you have to scale back what programs you can do because you don't have as many people on the upper scales, you know, I guess I'd say do what you have to do, but that is important, I guess, to point out, but I'm not going to take that into consideration into what I think is the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, another good example of where reasonable people can come to different conclusions looking at the same set of facts. In my case, it's very appealing to give our residents an opportunity to take action, to guard our environment, right?
Me too, yes.
Yeah, the message that I would want to convey is, hey, you have an opportunity to go green, really green, and to do so 25 years ahead of schedule, and it'll only cost you 3 to 4% more. And by the way, you don't have to do that. You can opt down to B. So I would prefer that approach, but I understand the reasons for going the other way. I do want to say that before the PCIA debacle, we did have a greater emphasis on potential cost savings because it looked like it could be as much as 5%. We had discussion about, hey, if your bill is, you know, $400, $20 a month is meaningful to a lot of people. That's $240 a year and so forth. And as we realized that that door is closing, you know, for political and other reasons, then we affirmatively took action to minimize any kind of appeal of a cost savings and tried to make it very clear that that was a secondary, if it were to materialize at all. I think maybe the message didn't get out as well as we would have liked because there was this whole appeal of a potential cost saving. But, you know, I can see where you have that perception, but it wasn't what motivated this group, if I can speak for this group. We're really looking at encouraging people to go as green as they comfortably felt, you know, to do so. Question to staff, this matter is coming before my council Thursday. And so what action would you want? I mean, does our council need to debate this issue about what the default would be, or are you just looking for the council, like a thumbs up, thumbs down, to move forward or not? What action would you want our councils to take at our respective meetings?
And each, I think, will be a little bit different. I think Palm Springs is kind of geared up to take some action sooner rather than later. So I throw the question back to the two of you. And that's why I pointed out you don't need to take any action at all. We were planning on briefing each of the councils and not having necessarily a recommendation at this stage.
I thought action was preferred if we're going to meet the rollout.
The rollout, yes. The DCE board needs to take an action in March. The respective councils do not.
Well, and I say this before, this is important enough that I think I'd rather get direction from council. I don't want to make that decision and have four angry women,
sure.
which is what I have, would have on either side of me. So,
then initially, if that's the direction,
right.
Having your council concur that continuing to move forward is the right thing to do.
Okay.
Making a decision about the products is something that could happen a little bit later.
Could happen
right.
Now, but could also happen
yeah.
later.
But I think they're related. So it's sort of hard to do it mm-hmm. in that vacuum. If you start at what would be the equivalent of lean power, you have less than 1% opting up. Just because most people, yeah, you know, I mean, I've never opted up on Edison just because it, you know, it just isn't in front of me.
Yeah.
And so I think doing it for when you're going to have, if you have less than 1% of people doing greener than Edison is a real question, if that's the route it goes. So I do think making a decision, it all goes together. I think, you know, what's the benefit to the cities? How does that impact? I think it's all one conversation. I don't think you can separate them out.
I concur. And, you know, obviously, if it was just up to me, we'd have five votes on Thursday that say move forward and make the 100% green the default. What I was trying to get at is rarely do things go with council completely the way I want. So if they don't, then I wanted to know the minimum required to move this forward.
Yeah.
You know, and if we have an opportunity to move it forward, then if there's resistance or discussion about, well, what's the default, then I'd rather not be an obstacle to moving this forward in the timeline. And at least have the opportunity to address that later.
And I don't know how my council is going to feel. We're going to have a new member on, hopefully here soon, have a new member on our council.
Yeah.
And they may be angry that, you know, that I suggested that we would go the other way. But I'm sharing what I think is best.
Right.
And but yes, it is. I think that is important to get to. Well, what do you actually need from us at this at this next presentation? Because it may generate much debate. And will we need to come to a final conclusion, or is it something that we can continue to debate and get input from our communities on?
Yeah. All right. I guess one other just to add into all this, because I really hadn't thought about or known this before. But if the 100% green is going to generate money and the other is not, then if one city goes that route, which totally I also respect and understand, but the decision is everyone has to generate the same amount of money, does that end up maybe lowering the 100% green a little and raising the non-one? I mean, that's the kind of data I think we have to decide before our cities
maybe
can
vote.
That's where I was wrestling with, is you don't have complete information in part because you don't have complete information and you haven't made a policy determination. It's going to be a policy call, and there are cross subsidies everywhere in government. This one is one that you're going to make an explicit decision about. If in fact the green, and it looks like it does, generates margin and the base, the cheaper product doesn't.
And I do understand how that goes in market. Just so you don't know, it's not going. It's not slipping.
I understand. I wasn't hopefully suggesting
by city
otherwise.
Subscriber. It's a fair question.
Those are all.
I work in a government that has lots of contracts. There's other entities, as you know, and there are different margins. Yes, I totally understand.
Indeed. But there's some policy calls that this board has got to make that might, in fact, influence the decision at a city council meeting.
Yes.
Right?
I think we get the general sense of councils at this point, but I don't think we do more than that without that.
Yeah, that might be, and perhaps my recommendation, if one was to go back and say that this is the way I'd suggest doing it and get that concurrence, I think there'd be a secondary step that we run the analysis based on two or one or three cities doing one thing and the remainder doing the other, and then come back to you and have you understand and tease out what are the policy implications of that. Is that fair?
Yep.
So it could be a preliminary read from your council, but you need not make that decision. We talked about timing. It could go into summer. We've got some flexibility here.
It was pointed out to me by Ryan Stendell, who's our director of development. One of our stars at City Hall. So maybe in terms of the program options, you're looking on item 3, kind of a up and down vote, go or no go. And then perhaps direction from the cities, if they care to offer it at this point, on between 1 and 2, which is which to make the default option. Would that work in terms of not being a hindrance to this moving forward on the projected timeline?
It certainly could if you want to put those questions before. Yeah.
I'd like Savvy. I'm curious what would be the most helpful.
I think you put the briefing on and that you have the same conversation with your colleagues.
Fair enough. Okay.
There's no, you know.
But what I hear is that at a minimum, because again, my concern is if it's the will of my council for this to move forward, I want to know what's needed so that when we reconvene in March, I am empowered to give you the green light that you need to maintain the timeline.
Yes. And that green light, you need not identify even the products in March. You just need to identify the green light to allow us to take some steps with the regulatory agencies.
I will kind of tip my hand, and if not all three cities opt to move forward in the same way, assuming that we do move forward, I think any kind of excess funds generated should be shared amongst should benefit the ratepayers who have invested in that fund. I think it would be inappropriate to those that are making that decision to then have their funds benefit ratepayers that have not made that same decision. As a general concept, I'm open to discussion. I'm saying that's a concern that I would have.
Understood. And again, it very much relates to performer. Why can't we generate more? And I think we know the answer. Why we can't generate more margin with the basic product. We will just continue moving on. We'll make some modifications to the staff reports to focus on overall bill. We will clarify what decisions need to be made by when, by all entities. And know this will continue to evolve over the next 4 and 5 months, just like it did last year when we were going through this.
You guys satisfied about what you understand what you need to? Yeah. Okay. All right. Then if there's no further discussion on that item, then we'll move forward to the financial part.
If I may, I have a quick question. Hi, my name is Elmer Diaz. I'm with IBW Local 440. I'm an organizer here in charge of the Coachella Valley. And I've been keeping up on the CCA since it was introduced on our end to, you know, educate our members that we have, not just in San Bernardino area, but Orange County, Riverside County, and San Diego County as well. Now, my questions are, as far as the CCA, the infrastructure that you guys are planning for these three cities, are you guys going to be leasing current power lines and transmission poles from Edison, or are you guys looking to do your own thing? My next question is, what type of employment? I hear a lot of talk about saving the residents money and stuff, but with creating a new utility, are you guys still looking for the same skilled, qualified people for these jobs, is like linemen, truck drivers for the equipment that's needed to set these poles up, and the maintenance that comes along with all of this, right? Now, if it's something for the community, and you're offering the community that they're going to be paying the same as they are with Edison, if not more, then I think there should be some provisions in there that will benefit directly with the community as far as the employment that will be, the jobs that will be created with this. So I want to know if there is any jobs, what type of jobs are we looking at? Are they going to, if there's going to be provisions for preference on veterans, on local area hire, on state certified linemen and electricians? Also, as far as the renewable energy with 100% green, it's a good product to push, but I think the most important thing is that once more people get educated about it is that mostly all the projects we're doing now are all green energy. So it used to be where before, you really had to choose whether, it's carbon or not, but almost every single project that we did in the power corridor here on the 10 freeway going towards Blythe is all renewable energy. So all that power is being pumped back into here and out into Arizona. There was also a bill that was trying to get passed where they were going to ask California to purchase power from Oregon and Washington, and that was going to count towards our 50% renewable energy, right? So there's a lot of things to look at. I just want to see how is the process set up, what exactly is going to be going on. That way I can report back to my members and let them know, the ones that are living in this area, what's going on with that, because I have members in all of your cities. Yeah.
So let me give you a very brief, oversimplified answer that will do nothing more than illuminate my ignorance. But I think it's relatively accurate, and then give you a suggestion.
Yeah.
Number one, as I understand it, a utility company such as Edison primarily does two things. They purchase power, and they deliver power.
Yes.
The delivery of the power is where we get into the kinds of questions you asked about putting up power lines and infrastructure and so forth. Our CCA, Desert Community Energy, does not involve itself in the delivery of power.
Okay.
We are strictly a power purchasing agency.
Cool.
So I think that answers many of your earlier questions. My suggestion to you is to meet with staff, and they can kind of dial down into some additional detail and bring you up to date, because we've been at this since 17, I think.
Yeah.
And a lot of, I think, what you're asking about
has been addressed over time.
Okay.
So staff is completely available to you. You've left your contact information. They're here, and they'll give you their contact information. I would encourage you to do
that. Sure.
Okay. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, it does. Also, I had one more question. Have you guys calculated what load you're looking at between the three, between Cathedral City, Palm Desert, and us? Like, what's the power that you guys are expecting to use? If you guys want to use renewable energy, 100% green, you have to look at what are you going to do when that peak demand is real high and you can't provide all these residents with 100% renewable energy because the sun's not out. You know, so there's also that. We can't overpromise and say every single time we're going to be delivering 100% renewable energy when we know that's not true, right? So as also, if we are going to be in, if we're not going to be in the power delivery business, as you said, we're going to be purchasing. Have we looked at any power purchase agreements for current projects that are in the process of being built right now? Like we have Eagle Mountain that's supposed to be providing over 1 gigawatt of power, of watts. So what we need there is, I think, 500 megawatts have been sold already as a power purchase agreement. But if we could have this CCA be a power purchaser for that project that's already, you know, going to be employing people from the Coachella Valley, we're going to be getting the power being produced here. We can't generate and distribute the power. So that's the problem with Eagle Mountain, is that it's such a big project, you can't scale it down to only produce X amount of megawatts, right? It's going to be the whole thing, and it's going to produce 1 billion. So are we looking into that? Also, different projects that we can look into to purchase power from them so that they can get the ball rolling on building those projects?
So the short answer is yes. That's one of the advantages of you know, local CCAs, that you will have the ability to purchase locally. The longer answer is staff can fill you in on those details. Yeah.
Okay. And just as a point, we had had some meetings with Chuck, IBEW representative, so great to have you in the area, and we'd be happy to sit down and work and not only answer your questions, but work with you on some of the concerns that you mentioned.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So with that, we'll move on to item 6B, and just to remind everybody, we're okay for now, but there is a 4:30 executive committee meeting, and I know a number of people in this room will be at that meeting. So with that, we'll turn it over to whoever's going to give the staff report. Number 6B.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. Good to see you folks again. So I'll walk through the financial update. I think the bottom line is, really didn't try to come up with any one recommended scenario. What the intent of this presentation is to kind of bracket a range of outcomes all around the discussion you all have been having here. And so ultimately, there's a very detailed Excel spreadsheet here. We can turn a lot of knobs and dials and all of those types of things, but again, the intent of today is just to kind of bracket a range of outcomes. So since we last, well, I guess we did talk about this or have this at the last board meeting, but kind of going back to end of July when the decision was made to suspend the program. A lot has changed, a lot hasn't, but all of those changes are now reflected in this. So Edison's generation rates, I think there was a reference earlier to the updated power charge and difference adjustment. Now that change has rippled through, is all factored into this. Updated market prices, as everybody knows, those are, you know, continually changing. And then also updating all of the internal operating and administrative costs and then the different product options that we've been talking about today. So I'm going to walk through some numbers here, but just a few key assumptions. And again, these are all things we can fine-tune as we move forward. But for purposes of today, we've assumed an April 1, 2020 start date in all scenarios. Not up here, but kind of germane to the last discussion, is when I do show the different scenarios, the assumption right now is that all three cities are doing whatever the scenario is that's been shown. Again, we can easily change that in the future, but for today, assume that all three cities are doing the same thing. As far as opt-out goes, we have assumed 10% in all scenarios. I think it was Don that had alluded to, you know, that's a very common assumption based off of, you know, CCAs at this stage of the game. Based off of what we've been seeing here recently, though, both with Clean Power Alliance as well as your actual experience a year ago, that's very conservative. I think you were actually running a little less than 1% at the time back then. But anyway, we've left that at 10%. Had the conversations around opt-down. That's going to vary. I'm going to run through a couple of specific scenarios, and then I got a sensitivity analysis at the end that you can kind of see how the numbers are sensitive to that. We have assumed that the basic product would be a 35% RPS, a renewable product. So there was a question earlier about what, you know, kind of old basic, new basic. That number is the same. What has changed, though, is we did dial back the carbon-free. The basic product previously had assumed 50% carbon-free. Now it's 25%. Now, a very logical question is, if you're 35% renewable, why are you only 25% carbon-free? And the answer is because going forward, out-of-state renewables are treated differently now. Up until or through 2018, out-of-state renewables were treated as renewable and were also treated as non-emission for GHG accounting. Going forward, though, state renewables are still treated as renewable on a power content label, but for emissions accounting, GHG accounting, the state is now looking towards the replacement supply, because out-of-state gets stored and then is redelivered at a later date. And so the original purchase, if it's out-of-state wind from, say, Washington or Oregon or New Mexico, that still counts as renewable. But then the question becomes, well, what is the replacement source? If it's procured from hydro, then it would still be treated as carbon-free. But if it's just system energy, then it won't get the carbon-free designation. We've assumed that it would not for purposes of this. So anyway, that's why the slight difference. And then the premium product, as we were talking about, 50% renewable, 100% carbon-free. The presumption here is that that would all be large hydro filling in that other 50%. And I skipped over the rates again. For modeling purposes, we assumed that that basic product would be at a 1% discount to Edison's generation rate, and that the premium product would be at about a 5 to a 10% discount to Edison's generation rate. And also, too, just for kind of easy math, the generation component is approximately half of the total bill. So this first scenario here assumes all three cities set the default product at the premium product. Again, the opt-out rate would be 10%. In this scenario, we assume that the opt-down would be also 10%, coincidentally. So you can see revenues, expenses. Expenses are broken into power supply, non-power supply. And there was a reference earlier, obviously, the power supply are the overwhelming preponderance of the cost of running the business. And you can see the net revenues down here. So the 2020 net revenue of just under $6.1 million plus the little over $4 million that you already have in the bank is how you get to $10.5 million of cumulative net revenue after the first year of operation. And then again, the funds grow, the net revenues accumulate each year after that. And again, I'll have a couple of sensitivity charts so you'll see some of these numbers come back again. So in the second scenario here, still assume that all three cities set the default product at the premium product, but in this case, assume the opt-down are at 50%. So half of the customers would elect to opt-down to the basic product. So you can see here the net revenue numbers, and you know, the earlier comments about the premium product is generating positive margins. You can see here the net revenues are falling off here relative to what the assumptions were before. Still generating positive cumulative net revenue, but before in 2022, I think we're up a little over $18 million. Now that number's down to $11 million of cumulative net revenue. The third scenario here, it just assumes that all three cities set the default product at this basic product, and again, keeping with the 1%. And as you can see, it doesn't generate positive net revenues. It's actually at a slight loss. I didn't model it, but I didn't include it in a slide. If you essentially set rates at parity to Edison, you're at break even. Which, and not getting too far into the weeds, but with the changes in the exit fee and how that is now calculated, it makes very good sense that the basic product at rate parity would essentially be a break even with Edison. It's, you know, everybody's procuring from the same market, buying from the same pool of resources. So sometimes you may get lucky in your timing, sometimes maybe unfortunate, but over time they're going to pretty much come out in the wash. So these next two charts are just looking at a range of sensitivities, the one we've already went through, plus a few more. These next two charts are identical. This one just looks at the first year of 2020 of how net revenues track, and I'll describe the chart here in just a second. And then the next chart looks at over the 3 years, how net revenues accumulate over time. So what this chart does is it looks at three different rate scenarios. It looks at a 5% premium to Edison's generation product, a 7.5% premium to Edison's base generation product, and a 10% premium to Edison's base generation product. And again, just trying to bracket. And as Noah did include the footnote here on this slide, that would be to the base generation product. So on a total bill, those would work out to be about 2, 3, and 4%. And in this case, we just use the domestic rate where the generation rate is about 40% of the total bill. So each of the blue columns show for the 5% rate adjustment, the red are the 7.5%, and then the green are reflect the 10%. And then each of the columns are clustered by the opt-downs. So the first cluster of three bars there, the 1.09 up to the 6.088, that assumes a 10% opt-down, and then 25%, 50%, 60%, so on and so forth. So you can see here in this one chart, at least in the first year, how net revenues are impacted both by opt-downs as well as where the rates are set relative to Edison's generation product. This chart is displaying the exact same information, except for now it's looking at the cumulative net revenues over the three-year period. So obviously setting rates higher generates more revenue, as you would expect, and then also to the lower the opt-down percentages. Again, kind of relative to these numbers, you know, based off of CPA's experience, that would probably say that the 10% is conservative from, you know, just based off of their experience. I think Don or somebody had referenced back in the survey, and I know there's some questions about the survey. There was approximately half or maybe a little over half that were willing to pay some amount in excess of that. So that's kind of where the numbers were coming from. So I know I went through that kind of quickly.
Sure. Okay.
Questions?
I have a question. If, say, this does go through, and at first we do have...
Let us just have a chance, and then we'll turn it over to public comment. Yeah. That's okay. 1 second. So I don't know that this is significant, but as you do the green bar, which is the higher premium, is there an impact where you'd expect less people to participate? I mean, it wouldn't necessarily follow this exact chart. Do you understand my question? Because these are total savings, and they assume the same rate of participation, whether it's 5%, 7.5%, or 10% premium. I would think as the premium goes up, the participation would go down.
I understand the question. I'm trying to think of how to answer it. That's a great question. I think part of the challenge is that, looking at both opt-out rates and opt-down rates, there's much more history on CCAs, California CCAs, on the opt-downs. And I'm, certainly very comfortable saying, based off of that experience, that 10% is conservative on that kind of range. I think Marin, launched back in 2010. They were north of that. I think they may have been as high as 20%. But they launched in a very different environment. There's been different rules put forth now by the CPUC as far as IOUs, messaging and those types of things. It was just a very different environment, so I don't think it's a fair comparison. I think if you looked at everything here currently, most folks or most CCAs have been experiencing anywhere. Well, and Don had the numbers for CPA up there, but I think have been more in the 1%, maybe up to 7 to 8% kind of a range. So I think the 10% is very conservative. The opt-downs just don't have the history there. CPA is really the first one to, at least in the state of California, and I'm not sure what may or may not be going on elsewhere, what other representative samples there are, but CPA is really the first to test it in California, and they enrolled their residential customers here in February and are just, continuing that. So that's, new and real-time data that's coming out of their board report. So I know I'm kind of rambling here. If based off of the available information we have,
it feels like the 10%, both on the opt-out as well as the opt-downs, are conservative assumptions. And so I agree with you qualitatively, but I would, at least based off of the data we had, if we wanted to model that, it would probably seem like we could be a little less conservative in our assumptions as the starting point, mm-hmm. and then assume, you know, as the rates go up to the 10%, we're probably closer to the 10% opt-out rate, and by the time you get down to the 5%, you'd probably be at something less than 10% opt-out.
With the opt-down, keep in mind, to Councilmember Core's suggestion to us, we're focused on the total bill. The scenarios we're showing are the difference between 2, 3, and 4%.
Right.
And while there's not much history, we do have insight into how people respond to numbers like that from all sorts of social science. 2 to 3 to 4% will mean virtually nothing to most customers, the difference between 2 and 3 and 4%. My guess is that bigger predictor will be who lives in your communities and what's important to it. And you saw some differences in the survey results. And if I had to guess, I'd say there'll be more people opting down in Palm Desert than in Palm Springs, regardless of the 2, 3, or 4%. But there are other factors that are probably more powerful predictors of opt-down rates than whether it's 2 or 3 or 4%.
But the slide that I was questioning was not the opt-out percentage. It was the premium over the current Edison rate.
Yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. I was saying the total bill, though, is 2, 3, or 4%.
Yes. Again, yeah, just when we look at these, especially for the public, because we get confused. So to really focus on the total bill, because that's what people are paying, and that's what people need to know. And, what we're actually buying is the numbers you're showing, but what really matters is the total bill and making these decisions for folks.
The other question that I have from a financial standpoint is one of the slides showed if like all three of us went the other way with the default, that we could get into a deficit situation. And from a legal standpoint, what's the practical consequence of that? Are the individual members of the JPA, the cities, potentially liable for that deficit, or is that something that's ever been crossed before?
We've explored that in the run-up to starting initially, and the JPA does protect member cities, and it could always be challenged. If the JPA were to go bankrupt, could it be challenged? Of course it could be. But the JPA itself sets liability limits of $1 on each member agency. And that's the way, and there are thousands of JPAs in the state of California.
But, you know, with potential very low or negative net revenue, it seems that maybe we need to relook at what the default is. Because if we all went that route, and that doesn't work. I think from a policy perspective, putting aside the legal for a minute.
I assume that's what would happen.
Right. From a policy perspective.
Allow it to go to the negative. What would happen is we'd end up slightly raising those rates to at least break even.
So. Yes. And so we need to just, you know, look at those financial for a policy thing, because going forward in that scenario would be obviously a tougher.
And that's why there is this independence of the three cities and, you know, acknowledging local control and local authority. But you are tied together. And and one surplus and one deficit in one financial statement may not mean much difference to the auditors, but they have policy implications that we need to sort through. You need to sort through as a board.
Yeah, the practical implication of my question is really if we make different decisions, that if one ends up in the negative, you know, I mean, obviously the more financially viable. Forget the other aspects, but the more financially viable way to proceed is to make the 100% the default from a financial standpoint. So the question is, if one city or more go the other way, they perhaps are at greater risk from a financial standpoint. So how does that impact the other two, or kind of building up a reserve? So those are just some of the questions that eventually I'm sure will be answered.
This is the first time you all have had a discussion of potentially different default. Yeah. Perhaps we should get into this in more deep detail and have you all understand the implications and what can be done to address them. the board policy could be no default should be at least projected to be a loser financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that you project, you use the 1% savings in these projections.
Exactly, guess. Right. Yeah. So if it was right. at parity, what yeah, what is what are the implications there?
Okay. Okay.
So
or those are all talking conceptually.
Right,
and I get
but
it.
But having those, making it very clear what the implication of the choices are individually as well as collectively should be on your agenda. Yeah. And we'll do that, if not in March, yeah, and soon thereafter.
That's really the point, is that, you know, the CPA in me is seeing that it's financially, again, if we just narrow it on financially, somewhat more prudent to proceed with the 100% energy default. That's the conclusion I'm kind of coming to, on the financial aspect of the choice.
But that is, right, how we set the rate.
Yes.
So we could, you know...
You're right.
Right? We're sort of... asking the people who are doing 100% to actually also help us pay more, and right, instead of subsidizing the other way, right? Greener, you know, gets a discount. So there are lots of ways we could cut this that we need to discuss, because right now the assumption is if we go default, those folks are going to be subsidizing people who opt down even. So we really need to be looking at...
Turn it the other way.
Yeah, exactly. And that, so these are big policy decisions that will impact our final decisions on all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good. Good discussion.
Yeah.
I think we have comments from the public, so we'll go ahead and do that.
Oh, mine, you just answered my question there. So.
That's why we talked first.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
I'll save it for later.
Can I ask a question? What financial position would DCE be in if we had launched when first intended?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer. If things would have turned out better than what the projections were at the time, because some of the worst case scenarios in the market and stuff didn't pan out quite as bad. I mean, it got pretty high, but it wasn't quite as bad. But I'd have to look at it to give you a definitive answer. I'm not sure.
Any other questions or comments from the public on this agenda? Yes.
Rosario, Avila, Cathedral City. I just want to go on record saying that I've been following this CCA since it was first proposed to be the largest in California. It would have been the three tri-county CCA, San Bernardino, Western Riverside, Council of the Government, and CVAG. And when I watched the San Bernardino meetings, they couldn't get a second vote on it, so San Bernardino did not move forward. And then in Coachella Valley, we were started off with six cities, and we ended up with three. And so for someone who's been watching this from the beginning, I just want to remind everyone of the history, which is the feasibility study before any of these three cities voted to create this new JPA. Clearly said that there was at least three market risks, and two of them was a spike in natural gas and exit fees. So from a public perspective, if those were known market risks and you signed up for this JPA promising us lower rates, you're basically offering us oranges to Edison's apples, but now you're saying, no, we're just offering you the same apples. So that's just a public perspective. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion on this topic? Okay, and it was informational only. We got a lot of information.
Yep.
Thank you very, very much. And let's see where that puts us on the agenda. That brings us into informational item number 7, which is the attendance record. And thank you, staff, for the unaudited balance sheet, which is very informative. I did have a very quick question on that, hopefully a very quick question. There's a receivable from the Energy Authority of almost $1 million. What is that, and is it collectible? $944,000 under accounts receivable. And if there's not an immediate answer, we're meeting again soon enough on March 10th, I think, if we can get...
This is effective through January.
Okay, yeah. Even though the power was all sold off, I forget the exact dates now, for August through the end of the year,
those transactions still settled on a normal cycle, which adds you after the fact. So I presume what that is that was the net proceeds from the would have been for December purchase activity that still needed to be paid.
So when we get the February
that's
statement,
actually been deposited as of
it's in the bank.
Today.
Yeah. My favorite kind of receivable.
This just goes through the 31st, so it just hadn't shown up yet. It's there now.
So we'll get up to 4.7 or 8 less any additional expenses that continue to be incurred.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for doing that. One other question. I know these are unaudited, and there's a bunch of expenses that I'm sure are fine and all that. But is this part of the annual audit engagement contract with the CVAG CPAs?
Yes.
Will this be a part of it? Because I know we're a separate entity. Okay. So eventually, we will get audited financial statements.
You will. And we didn't engage the auditor this year just because there weren't enough transactions.
Yeah.
But
the June 30th.
When we do next year's audit, we'll do. Everything has been incurred from start.
Okay. And when you say next year, is that the year that will end June 30th, 19?
Yes. It'll
okay. End. Okay. Excellent. I think we all feel a little better with that since
yes.
We're playing with people's money.
And again, there just haven't been that many transactions. So we did engage the auditor this year. The first audit you'll have will be following this fiscal year because there'll be a lot more transactions towards the end of the end of next year, we will then do the audit for
and
all.
This current fiscal year, it ends June 30th, 19. Will
in
that
end
be
of
audited?
20, we'll
okay.
start, we'll do an audit after end of 20 for everything to date.
Okay. Can we consider accelerating that to an audit of the fiscal year ending June 30th, 19?
You can.
Often based on number of transactions, so if it's not a whole lot of transactions, I would think it wouldn't be too cost prohibitive, and we're sitting on a lot of money. My concern is there's not a lot of transactions, but it's still, roughly $30 million of revenues and $24 million of expenditures, and, I think I would feel better getting a sense that an independent CPA has looked at it and said, things are okay.
All right. So we do it for this fiscal year as well.
The current fiscal year that will end June 30th, 19.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You might look at what the expenses.
Yeah,
yes.
The expenses seem out of range. I'll get back with you,
please.
But otherwise, consider it done.
Thank you. Okay, so that was item 7. Announcements is the next meeting, which is Monday, March 18th, 2:30 p.m. Same bad time, same bad channel, same bad location.
Yeah, we might move to a larger room. We seem to be getting a few more people each time, so we'll let you know.
Yeah. Okay. Any other items before we adjourn?
No.
No, thank you.
Meeting's adjourned. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to show you this.
Katie, I didn't want to ask it in the meeting, but it looks like this LA County one. I'm not going to make choose their own default rate. So did they deal with this? Was it possible to price each one so that you make a more? It's all in the price. You could price each one so that the margins would be the same. It would mean there'd be less difference between them.
Yes,
probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And did they? Do you know how they did that? Because there's a whole bunch of them. It looks like they pretty much a third in terms of what they showed.
We don't know now, but we're just talking about because they're kind of the new model, if you will, since the ex officio change. So we'll have to look at the
for clarification.
And maybe that's something they could.